to be passionate about what your idea is or what it is you're trying to accomplish. You've got to put your whole soul into it.
Creating this container where the ideas are the competition, but the people are not the competition, is really important to us.
Hey folks, this is Abe Shreve. Welcome to the Choose Difficult podcast. The path to success is not easy. Here we explore the stories of those who choose difficult and change the world they live in. I'm excited today to introduce you to Monty Powell and Anna Wilson. This is a power couple. I say they're a power couple because they are so accomplished in the world of songwriting and musical performance. Monty is a well-known songwriter, so well-known that he has written for Keith Urban, Chris Cagle, Brooks and Dunn, Billy Ray Cyrus, Diamond Rio, Tim McGraw. Anna has sang and recorded with Rascal Flatts, Kenny Rogers, Billy Dean, Lady A, the list goes on. They're currently working on a project with Billy Joel called A Nashville State of Mind. And we had the blessing of sitting down and talking to them about what it's like to create music that climbs the charts like they do. I mean, in 2010, Monty won the Country Music Awards Association Triple Play Award, which means that he penned 3 number one hits in 1 year. And these guys have sort of done it all. So how does a couple like that even meet? Well, like all great rock stars, they met backstage at a concert.
We met backstage at a Diamond Rio concert. I was their producer and she was their publicist. And so we were absolutely not supposed to pursue any sort of a personal relationship at all because of the business ties. But early on, she told me that, you know, like so many people in Nashville, yes, I'm here and I am a publicist, but what I really want to do is write songs. You know, that kind of started a little bit of a back and forth with like, well, you know, play me some things. I'm open. I mean, my job is to hear stuff, not to play the, you know, no solicited material or all of that. I mean, if you pursue the doors, particularly the way that Anna was capable of pursuing them, they will open and people will listen and you will get your opportunity to be heard, you know? And so I was always open ears at any sort of open mic or anything like that. You don't ever know where the next great talent's going to come from.
I find Monty and Anna to be a lot of fun. They are definitely different people. There is a lot of energy and electricity around these two, and you can see the chemistry. But to really understand what makes them such a powerful couple, we need to understand what makes each of them tick and what was the journey to get them to where they are now. So we're going to pick the story up with a very young Monty Powell who grew up with a father that was a songwriter. In fact, Monty's dad would load the family in the car and head off to Nashville.
My father was a songwriter. My father took trips to Nashville and made a couple of independent 45 records that we had hundreds of them in the house in boxes. And we would drive around the South and try to get DJs to play them. And they would, you know, we would go in and talk to them and say, hey, could you play this record? And then we would drive away as slow as we could, waiting for it to come on before the signal faded out. And so the notion of being a creative type, being a songwriter, going to Nashville in particular, was not foreign in my house. In fact, it was almost like, from my parents' viewpoint, we didn't quite make it in this generation. Why don't you go forward and see it if the next generation can?
Monty didn't load up the car, bet everything on a music career, and moved to Nashville to make his way. He went for a different reason.
I went because I thought that I was going to be either a lawyer, a politician, or a preacher, which, as we all know, are all the same things. But I was passionate about the music thing. I'd written songs since I was in my early teens. I'd performed in the high school bands. But I didn't have to say I didn't really go to Nashville thinking, I'm going to make it in the music business. I went to Nashville to go to college and just make that next matriculation. And man, did I discover that there was a music business. If you can see me, I'm doing the quotation marks. And that was a real eye-opener because we still lived in the days of maybe there'll be a talent scout in the audience, you know, and those kind of mythological things that tend to swirl around the industry. So getting there and realizing that there was a much more legitimate sort of business path that you could take, that if you had the talent, that it was a little bit more about work ethic, was a revelation.
Did you hear what he said? Talent alone isn't enough. You got to have the work ethic. And it's amazing how often we think we can just get something done on passion and excitement. That doesn't last. At some point, you have to do the stuff. But there are other things you can do to also amplify your success.
We talk to people all the time who ask us for advice. It never changes. Even as the digital revolution has revolutionized the industry, it's funny, our advice has never had to change. One of those main things is go somewhere where there is an industry that you can become a part of.
There's a principle in the book, The One Thing, which if you haven't read, I highly encourage you to read The One Thing. We have featured the co-author of that book, Jay Papasan, on this show, and the president of that company, Jeff Woods, on this show. It's a wonderful book. And they talk about in that book, does your environment match your goals? And that is what Monty is talking about right here. It's about making sure that you live in an environment or that you've created an environment around you that matches what you want to achieve. Monty grew up in a family that understood what it was like to pack up and go to Nashville, what it was like to get into that environment. But that is not exactly the support system that Anna had. In fact, her family was very worried. But the more that we get to know Anna, you get the sense that nothing is going to stand in the way when she knows that she can accomplish something.
They were very anti me going and pursuing the entertainment business because they didn't really understand it. You know, to them, it was to my parents and, you know, my family, you know, it was very foreign. And it was, you know, I would always get this, that's no kind of life for you. And you're going to live in a rat infested apartment and you're not going to, how are you going to make this work? And you're, it's a hard life and you're always on the road and just there's drugs and sex and the rock and roll and all this stuff and all the things that, you know, of course they didn't, I guess, want for their daughter. But I was really determined to just sort of follow that sort of true north in my own spirit and what I felt like I at least had to give it a shot and try. I said, you know, I can try it, and if it doesn't work out, at least I can say I tried.
Anna told me that she didn't just pack up her car with no plan at all and start heading south. She did have a little bit more of a practical side. She was coming up on graduating from college, and when all of her friends went away on spring break to the beach, she did something different.
On my spring break of college, of my senior year, when everyone was going to Fort Lauderdale and the beach and hanging out, I went to Nashville with my resumes and went door to door to complete strangers, cold calls in their reception areas, and left my resumes and introduced myself in the hopes that maybe I might get a phone call back, you know? Luckily I did. The night before I graduated college, I got a phone call from a place that I had been pursuing, and it kind of worked out. But I definitely made some different choices than your typical college spring breaker, you know, because I was really, really wanting to do something very specific and knew what it was and knew that I had to sort of get going on it.
Anna found a lot of success in the country music genre, but then something a little unexpected happened. Jazz found Anna Wilson. She's a bit of an old soul and she has this beautiful voice for jazz. And so now you have some understanding of the background of these two and what places them in Nashville at the same time. So the question that I had for them is, well, how'd you fall in love?
We met backstage, and because we were working for the same artist there and stuff, that was it. That we met, and then we didn't talk for like, I didn't see you for like 2 months or something. Mm-hmm. And then in my very green unknowingness of how to network the industry, I was playing my very first gig live in Nashville and thought, oh, I had just switched jobs to a different firm. I thought, I can invite that guy, Monty Pat, to my show because I'm not working with Diamond Reel anymore. Oh, this is great. So 1.5 hours before I go on stage, I slide this little like flyer under the studio that he was working at, thinking there's probably no chance he's going to go, but like, I'm just going to do it so I can say I did it so I can check it off the list. And lo and behold, as I'm about to walk on the stage, he comes walking in the door of the bar and I'm like, Monty? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, you're here. And he goes, yeah, you invited me. I'm like, yeah, but I didn't think you'd come. I mean, I only invited you like an hour ago. That's sort of when we really actually started to connect and talk more about songs and songwriting and stuff. And then I found out that you produced another band that I was working at this new firm. So then I thought, oh, great. Well, now we have the same problem. And so we just sort of decided, I think I really want to pursue songwriting and not be a publicist. So I quit my job because it was clear that we were kind of getting together and writing songs.
Yeah, we were writing some things and slowly but surely falling in love.
They told me that even after they fell in love, it would be a number of years before they would actually come together as a couple. That would eventually happen and they would get married, and they were so fun to talk to, and they seemed to get along so well that I had to ask them, what's it like in the writing room when you're in there together and you're writing music? Is it all moonlight and canoes, or do you two ever disagree?
Every single time.
We bicker so badly. Oh my God, it's terrible.
When we do work with another co-writer that has never worked with us before, particularly kind of the first time, we always give the disclaimer. We have been married for almost 21 years now. We've been together for 27 years. We've written hundreds of songs together. We are not going to get divorced today.
But boy, it sure sounds like we are.
It can sound like it about 2 hours into a difficult co-writing situation. And oftentimes the third wheel can just kind of like sit back and disappear a little bit. Like, what is going on?
One of the things that plagues companies and leaders in business and people that are working together is that they don't have a great way to facilitate ideological, productive conflict. And in order for a business to be effective, in order for a creative environment to produce something that is quality, we need a high clash of ideas and a low clash of egos. And I have listened to this recording a bunch, along with my producer, Jake. And every time we hear Anna laugh like that, it just makes me laugh out loud. They talk about the bickering, and they talk about how intense it is, that they have to give a disclaimer to others. But I love what they say next.
It never leaves the writing room, and it never leaves mutual respect. That's the main container and safe place. Creating at all requires a safe place for you to be vulnerable, say the things out loud, quieten your own self-critic, even if you're the only one there. But when you're collaborating in a room with several people, it has to be a safe place. Can't tell you the number of times that all of us, you know, have sat down to write a song, and it's like, what should we write about today? Well, I just broke up with my girlfriend. Okay, they're not going to tell you that unless they feel safe, you know? So creating this container where the ideas are the competition, but the people are not the competition, is really important to us. So we will absolutely compete our ideas to the death, but we're never competing against each other. We have absolute mutual respect for the other one's ability to do it with me, without me, on their own, with other people that I don't even know, and bring it back and blow my mind. So having that platform, I think, makes the internal competition for ideas a safe place.
I hope you paid close attention to what he just said, because it's really important. It is the mutual respect, the belief you have that that person could leave and do this all on their own without you, that allows there to be a safe environment for that internal competition for ideas. That is really important. In fact, when we create content, we have rules that govern the writing room when we're creating content, because it has to be built on mutual respect, even when you're disagreeing on a point. In fact, I think that it is some of that competitive spirit that makes Anna and Monty such a powerful couple. It keeps them in this place where they are songwriting, they're working with all these incredible people, they're writing their own music, and they're not looking for a plan B.
I had a great conversation with Keith Urban one time about plan B. And that's the conversation that a lot of folks have. You know, this is my plan A. This is my fallback position. Everybody in my family had a fallback position, all the way out to cousins. The vast majority of them are in their fallback position. Anna's family wanted to make sure that she had a plan B.
So I started with my plan B to get to my plan A.
Started with plan B to get to plan A. And, you know, I'm sitting there talking to Keith, and he's like, And I have a terrible Australian accent, but he's like, money, you know, I only have a plan A. I have no fallback position. This is what I'm going to do. I will do it at whatever level it receives me, at whatever energy it gives me back, but there is no fallback position. And every now and then you meet someone that we give that advice to. You're one of these people that needs to do this until you take your last breath. I have no idea what that path means or what it's going to give you back, but you shouldn't have a plan B.
Don't have a plan B. I love that. To some, that sounds crazy. Have a fallback. But I think that what Money and Anna have pointed out, this understanding that everyone that they know is in their fallback, is in their plan B, means they weren't really committed to that plan A. The message that I took from this is don't make another plan. Get really clear on your plan A and then go to work.
Are you going to commit to becoming an expert at something? You know, are you going to commit the time, you know, whether you're using Malcolm Gladwell's definition or not, are you going to commit to becoming what we say above the bar? Okay. So there's, and if you don't mind a little dissertation on this, art, music, novels, films are subjective. You know, there's music you like and music that I like, and they can be two different musics. And we can dislike that music as well. And so we listen to things and go, ooh, I hate that. Or we listen to things and go, ooh, I love that. But there is a place where subjectivity gets taken out of the calculus. If you go to the Museum of Modern Art in New York City and you look at a Jackson Pollock painting and you don't get it, you are the one that's being judged, not Jackson Pollock. You cannot look at it and go, oh, that's trash. It has moved out of subjectivity and has objectively now been raised to the level where people understand that it's great art. The same thing happens when people start to write songs. Can I tell you something's a hit song? I don't know. Can I tell you something's a bad song? Every time, absolutely, 100% of the time. So we're always attempting to get people to write something that is above the bar. And once it becomes into that above the bar sort of level, then the correct sort of subjectivity can start to take place. And it can maybe take its place. Maybe it can become a hit. Maybe it can be recorded. But the things below the bar are never going to work. And so it's much easier to just try to divide it into those sort of two hemispheres for a lot of people. And I think that that could apply in a lot of other business examples and things as well. And that reflects a little bit on the plan A and the plan B. You know, it's like, I'm sticking with this until I'm doing stuff at a level that's professional and proficient enough that the goal that I'm after can release energy to me and achieve it or not. It doesn't guarantee it to you, but doing work below the bar guarantees that you will never reach that level.
I really like what he says here, that doing work above the bar doesn't guarantee that you're going to make it, but doing work below the bar does guarantee you're not going to make it. If you're going to do work, then it's important that we do the very best work that we can. And that work often involves collaboration, and it often involves seasons where we just have to give more to that particular focus than other areas of our lives.
The thing for me is, like, you have to be passionate about what your idea is or what it is you're trying to accomplish. And you've got to kind of put your whole soul into it. And if you're not doing that, not only you're not being true to yourself, you're not being true to the process. You're not being true to the end result. You're not even being true to the person you're collaborating with, even if they strongly disagree with you. And at the end of the day, you have to also, which is the hardest thing for me, is because I get so passionate and so like, this is what I would do if I was the only person in the room and I think this is right. But you really have to put on your listening device. Then there comes a point once you're in that safe place and you have a collaborator, it's like, okay, are you done now? Did you get it all out? Did you say everything you had to say? And then you can trust that person to know that they heard you. Whether they agree with you or not is really not what the passion that you're bringing to it. It's like, I just want to be heard. I want to get it all out. I want to make my point. I want you to hear my point. And if you still disagree that it's not the right way to go, fine. Yeah. Then let me hear yours. And that's where the listening comes in. And then you can really start to sort of find that balance between your passion and what's important to you and where your line in the sand is. You know, if this doesn't go into the song or whatever, I'm going to step away from this. Or I understand why you think that we need to pivot and turn over here and go this direction at this juncture because it accomplishes X. And so I think there's a blending of sort of your passion and your energy and your vision, but also being able to find a place for that once that has had its outlet to listen to the other side. I mean, that's really where collaboration, the magic of it can happen.
I want you to notice that Monty and Anna have a lot of insight on how they effectively work together. I mean, it was clear to me that they have talked about how to have a clash of ideas and not have it destroy a marriage, how to most creatively collaborate on a song, and how to make a stand when you feel like you've got a point that you're willing to fight for. So along the way, things start changing in Nashville and in country music and in the way that music is downloaded. Anna said that they started to lose some of the leverage that they'd experienced in the industry, and they were honestly just a little tired. They'd raised a family, and so they stepped away. They had a vacation home in the mountains of Utah. They had one on the beach in Florida. And they just spent some time living in their vacation homes and thinking through what they would like to do for the next chapter of their life.
So when we kind of got out and free of that, it was like, well, we can write whatever song we want. We can play whatever guitar riff you want. You can be an artist, you know, in the second half of life. You know, in Nashville, they might say, well, you can't really step out and start an artist career at 55. Well, yeah, you can in our world. And, you know, we're about 10 years apart. And so we decided to form Troubadour 77 sort of in this second half of life to pursue really the fun version of music, which is why we got into it in the first place. And it was really pursuing music of our influences and the music that really, really mattered to us, which our heroes, you know, James Taylor, Carole King, the Eagles, Linda Ronstadt, all the people that I grew up singing into that hairbrush with, you know, and started to remember the reasons why we came to the party in the first place, you know, and we started writing these songs. And in my opinion, they are the best songs that I've ever written, you know, way better than anything anyone has ever recorded of at least my catalog. They mean more to me. They say more important things. And so we just sort of went for it. And now we're like 6 years into it. And, you know, we have our following, you know, the world has changed. You can do things on social media and you can reach an audience in a different way. And, you know, we're not going to probably be Keith Urban playing Madison Square Garden, but we're doing the music that we love. And we're finding an audience that loves it just as much as we do. And so that's really exciting and fun. And really, it's been very fulfilling. And I think that's really important. And now to that end, that we have gotten a chance to do that, it has actually re-inspired us a little bit. And we are actually stepping back into Nashville again, actually this year, after being gone for about 5 years and finding that we have something to offer again, something fresh and something just a little bit different. And I think people are really starting to embrace it. And I think we're going to hopefully get set up for maybe a third act.
Monty said that now that they no longer have to create songs to earn a living, now that that's handled, they just get to focus on making music that they both really enjoy together, engaging in interesting projects, and letting the industry part of it take them wherever it'll take them. They actually have played some large festivals. They are starting to get some recognition. They have a little footprint, he said. People are recognizing them. And they've got a really exciting project that they're working on with none other than the legend, Billy Joel.
Anna and I wound up getting signed to a publishing deal at the same company that owned Billy Joel's catalog. And here you've got these songs sitting there that have been originally purchased and then purchased on a greatest hits package, purchased as 8 tracks, then as cassettes, then as CDs. And they're trying to find ways to re-monetize something that is ubiquitous and everyone already has probably two of.
How can we sell Piano Man again?
Again.
Let's record it without a piano.
which is their gig. And I totally get that.
Right.
That company, through working with them, became aware of Anna's Countrypolitan Duets project. And they called us up and said, how in the world did you get all of these artists to agree to perform with her, and B, all of these record labels to say yes, that they could do that?
Because it's like a legal nightmare. I mean, it's so difficult, you know,
and so
to get those.
The answer was that we know the artists, and rather than go through managers and lawyers and people who want to tell you no, we just went and talked to our pals. Once you get yeses from them, everyone else just implements their vision. And that's what we told this publisher. And he said, do you think that you could do the same thing for Billy Joel? And we're like, absolutely. This is a road that we understand and we know. And that's what brought on a Nashville State of Mind. Billy actually wanted to do something that was country-based. He loved the country songwriting sort of paradigm and felt in many ways that if he hadn't wound up where he was, he might have wound up in Nashville as a songwriter. The other interesting thing is that Billy Joel only ever wanted to be a songwriter. He didn't really want to be a performer.
But in 1972,
you sang, if you wrote it, you sang it and sat down at the piano and he became what we know as Billy Joel. So, you know, we would sit with him and he would be, I'm so jealous of you guys. Y'all get to just write the songs, you know?
And we're sitting there like, I would love to be you right now. Are you kidding me?
So anyway, it was a really lovely triage of things that happened there. And as it turned out, we went to a bunch of artists that we knew who the vast majority, of course, said, yes, I would love to record a Billy Joel song, my favorite one. And the concept behind it that we sold to Billy, that he really got behind, was these songs you wrote and you were, in fact, the songwriter and you never recorded them. That's the mental game that we're going to play. And so we're going to these people and saying, okay, your favorite Billy Joel song is Always a Woman to me. You now have to forget that you ever heard Billy Joel's version of that. And we have to create it from scratch because we're not doing a tribute record. We're literally doing it as I found this song. And as the artist, here's what I would do. So we wound up with up-tempo songs being ballads being up-tempos. Obviously, any of the female songs were completely different because all of his are from a male perspective. There were duets and group sings on things that had never happened before. And they didn't sound like the Billy Joel records. But the songs, the purity of the songs came through. And that was a really, really cool thing to do and a really brave thing for him to do, to allow these artists to have complete creative control over the clay and run with it.
It was very special and an honor of a lifetime to work with such a fine songwriter and artist.
What an amazing project. I think there are very, very few people in this world that could actually pull something like that off, the Nashville State of Mind. You have different labels that own different songs. You have artists that are managed by different labels. There are so many hoops to go through. And I think part of what allowed them to succeed at doing this is the same kind of thing that allowed Anna to have such success with her album Countrypolitan Duets. And that is that they didn't see these things as insurmountable steps, as problems that cannot be solved, as reasons to turn back. In fact, Monty explained to us that they don't see problems as problems. They see them as puzzles.
There's a great lesson to learn there that, you know, the world also kind of breaks down into an A, B group as well, too. And that's people who see challenges as negative things, as difficulties, as setbacks. That's the language that you kind of hear. And then there's kind of the set of people who simply sees them as puzzles to be solved. And we're puzzle solving people. I don't ever really see anything as a setback. I just see it as, oh, well, that means there's some other piece of information or some other thing that we need to pay attention to. And Rubik's cubing all of those things together until one day you look up and you're like, all the colors are on the right side. It can be fun. It can absolutely undo people to where they just don't ever get to the finish line. But seeing problem solving as a puzzle and as a game, I think is a really great way to undo some of the things that set a lot of people back.
I love their approach to gamifying the challenges. I mean, there are many people that will find their way into some element of success in their business, and then it gets hard. The honeymoon period's over, or maybe they're not new anymore, and they're expected to produce something, and that can just literally shut you down, unless you view the next challenge as a puzzle, unless you keep perspective. And I'm very impressed by Monty and Anna's ability to keep perspective on what really matters, what's really difficult.
Difficult? What's difficult? You know, we tend to see these things aspirationally only.
Right.
As if, man, it's difficult to be successful. And it's difficult to write a novel and to finally get it out on the New York Times bestseller. You know, it's difficult to be unemployed. You know, it's difficult to wonder where your next meal is going to come from, to be underinsured, to not be able to get proper medical help. And I'm not just even talking about this country. I'm talking about conceptually humanity. It's difficult. It's difficult.
I really think that is a healthy perspective. This thinking around there are challenging things in life, but there are some things that are actually difficult. Not just difficult to achieve or difficult to overcome, but things that by their very nature are difficult, that hit us in the pit of our stomach. It's important to keep that perspective because this podcast is about people that face difficult circumstances and lean into them, that keep perspective, that keep pushing. And it's also important to be able to look up from time to time and realize this challenge I'm having could be worse. And so Monty and Anna have taken this incredible ability they have to collaborate with others and to produce music, and they've created a company called Song Sessions. In fact, you can learn all about them at songsessions.com. And this is exciting. I'm going to bring this to our company.
The 1 degree corollary to that is, do your people understand what their good work in the world is? And that's one of the things that the song exploration always
reveals.
Unpacks and reveals. And we have stood up in front of hundreds of CEOs and what's your good work in the world? Crickets.
They can't answer
Crickets.
The question. They
we
don't know how to answer the question.
We make chips for mobile phones. It's like, you don't, that you manufacture that. What's your work in the world? You know, and then, you know, ladies who never speaks up says, well, because we make these chips, we make distance disappear because you can reach out to someone that's a long way away. We're like, now you are starting to talk about what your actual work is. And it's astonishing. And I know you see this in coaching, how many times we meet people who do the job, have absolutely no idea what the actual
value
or good work in the world is, what we talk about behind that job is. And a song is a really good way to unlock that particular padlock.
I really enjoyed the time with Monty and Anna. I learned a lot. I appreciated how they put an emphasis on the work ethic, that it's important to have a dream, it's important to have passion, and it's important to get to work, lean in and do the heavy lifting. I also really appreciated their perspective on focus on doing work that is above the bar. In other words, don't do something the best you can do it. Do it the best it can be done. I find them really restless souls. Not restless in the sense that they're lost souls. I find them restless in the sense that they are creatives put on earth to create and at all times are looking for the next challenge. This project with Billy Joel seemed insurmountable, yet they are doing it. And now they're writing a musical. They just go from one challenge to the next and to the next. They're happiest creating. I thought it was extremely insightful to look at problems as puzzles and to keep a perspective. Things may be difficult professionally, but there are things in the world that are much, much more difficult, and we should maintain a perspective. Well, there you have it, folks. If you're a business leader and you would like to know what hiring a coach would look like for you and your organization, head over to mymapscoach.com and let's set up a meeting. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us an honest review. It really helps us in our mission to help others. I hope you enjoyed our time together, and I hope you'll join us next time as we continue to explore the stories of extraordinary individuals who choose difficult.